They're talking about caps on defense that will be held fast between 2012 and 2015, and then it becomes more of an open picture. There'll be a cap on discretionary, but there can be negotiation within Congress and changes as to sort of the flow of money between defense and non-defense. That's after 2015. So we've got a pretty solid picture for 2015. And it's a little fuzzy on either side of that.
Now, the defense secretary has been trying to essentially not so much cut, but shift money around $100 billion more from the back end systems, so more can be focused on the front end where he says the money's needed. Is that enough? Does he go far enough?
It doesn't serve deficit reduction whatsoever, so it's really part of an entirely different story. I mean, he is trying to bring the services and various service desires inside of the budget that the commission is actually trying to reduce. Their move within the recommendations, and this is the recommendations of the co-chairs, and it is a draft recommendation. They recognize that they'll change as deliberations continue. They grab Secretary Gates' initiatives and say, you know, thank you very much. We're applying that to deficit reduction.
Now, you guys have a report out called Debt, Deficits, and Defense, A Way Forward. Can we still continue to have the best defense department in the world, the best warfighters in the world, and yet trim back, pull back on how much we spend?
Well, I think you can only understand the defense budget, our current situation, and the opportunities for change in the context of there being a dramatic increase in the base budget, not just spending for war, but in the base budget over the past decade and the past 12 years. So it's gone up a great deal. Our margin of superiority is greater than it's ever been. And even our program, which is actually more ambitious than what the commission has recommended so far, it's about a third. We're looking for about a third more. Even that program only rolls back spending to 2003. These are serious cuts, but in the context of dramatic increases over the past decade. So yes, that can be achieved. We will end up with still the strongest military by a fair margin in the world.
One of the almost assumptions that you made in your report when I was reading through it last night, and I'll read from the executive summary, the Department of Defense programs are based on unreliable and unproven technologies.
Not all of them, but the ones that we target, a number of the systems that have been consistently criticized by the GAO and others, and that also are targeted by the co-chairs of the Deficit Commission. They are drawing on Congressional Budget Office reports. There are a number of them that would fall into that category. These are cutting-edge systems where we are employing technology to pursue capabilities to oppose a peer competitor that no longer exists. What the future holds, we can't say. But we can probably foresee the development of entirely new technologies. So we're buying aircraft when the future may be based on remotely piloted vehicles. So what we're saying is that the technology will change in the period of time between now and when that possible peer emerges. So we need to research, we need to develop, we need to prototype, but we do not have to purchase and deploy entire fleets of this technology, which is cutting edge today, but may be obsolete by the time we need it.
And what you're talking a little bit about, I think, is what, at least in the 20 years that I've been covering this, people have been talking about iterative approaches, spiral development, start small, roll out pieces of it, find what works, which just ends up seeming to be difficult to do in reality.
It is an expensive approach on a per unit basis, but if you're not buying fleets, it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And to incorporate the technology as it matures is not that difficult. And it's a smart way to go. It keeps you at the edge, and it keeps you relying on technology that is mature, well-tested, and you employ it to the extent that you need it. So what we begin to do is tailor our purchasing to the actual threats that are emerging, rather than trying to foresee threats that are 20 or 30 years down the line. They may not arise, and if they do, they may not look like they may not look at all like what we presently think they will look like.
Talk a little bit about the number of people itself, because people tend to be expensive. They're one of the bigger parts of the defense budget, and they also pay. We're a big lot of discussion about how much government employees are paid these days. Is that something that you looked at as part of the report?
We did, and it's really a distinction between what our proposals are and those of the commission. The commission relies more on achieving savings in personnel, in part by freezing pay. We look at that, and we propose that some of that can happen, but that the principal way is by reducing numbers. If you want to really achieve big savings, be assured that those savings are going to be realized. You need to reduce the size of the military. That means less force structure, units, people, and assets. That doesn't cut people's pay. What that does is, in reducing end strength, your personnel costs go down. So we rely more on that approach. The commission is putting a heavier emphasis on freezing pay for various categories of government employees. But it's true. We have very, very high quality personnel, the best in the world, and we have to pay for it. We've also discovered in recent years that, in a sense, we are fighting President Johnson's war with President Reagan's military. We are fighting a protracted, large-scale slog in Afghanistan. We're continuing to be deployed in large numbers in Iraq. But the personnel costs for that are much higher than they used to be in the Vietnam era when we had a conscript military. So in a sense, we've been fighting the wrong types of wars for our military. That's something to avoid in the future, if at all possible. And doing so would allow us to reduce some of the structure that we currently have. That's a sure way to savings that doesn't penalize people. Deficit reduction is about pain. It's not about gain, except for future generations. We're doing this for our kids. So there's no question that on all sides, and it's not just obviously in defense, but in all areas of government expenditure, people are going to have to make sacrifices. It's the only way forward. So, you know, we've really hit that point. We've got to that point where the rubber hits the road. We've talked about deficit reduction, debt reduction for a long time. It has been a political football tossed back and forth across the aisle. Now it's time to get serious about it.